Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro, and this week my guest is Tidbits Managing Editor, Josh Centers. Josh, welcome back.
Hi, John. Thanks for having me back. It's an honor.
Yeah, this is the third time you've been on the show. I have so much fun with you. It's cool to have you on the show. So for the listeners, I'll read a little intro, and then you can tell us about yourself some more. You're the managing editor of Tidbits, as well as the author of a Take Control book on Apple TV and co-author of a Take Control book on Preview. And now you've published a new book, Take Control of iOS 12. And so take it away and tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, okay. So I've been doing this thing with Tidbits. I started contributing to Tidbits in 2012, and that was really some of my first professional tech writing experience. And then about a year later, I got hired on as the managing editor, and I've been doing that for about 5 years now. And then a year after that, I wrote my first book, which was Take Control of Apple TV, and I've updated that a couple times since then. I've also been doing iOS books since iOS 8 now.
Oh,
so,
8. Cool.
Yeah. It goes back a ways now. So, yeah, I just did one in 12. So that's a pretty mature title at this point. And then, let's see, last year, it's kind of blurry. Last year, I did one on home automation, and I also co-authored, the Preview book with Adam Inks. So, yeah, it's been
a lot of stuff. We talked about home automation. That was a fabulous show. We talked about that in March or April. That was cool stuff.
Thanks. Yeah, it's fun. I wish more people bought that book, but I'm proud of it. It's one of my better ones, if I do say so myself.
Tell the listeners how they can get a Take Control book and what it's like and what the format is and how they buy it and how they get it.
You go to takecontrolbooks.com. We also sell them through iBooks and Amazon, but in our opinion, the best experience is buying from us directly, because you'll get several different formats. You get PDF, EPUB, and .mobi, which Mobi is the format the Kindle uses. Although I've never seen I've tried to load Take Control books on a Kindle. It's really not the best. PDF is really, I think, our best format. And then I would put EPUB and iBooks second to that. But, both those are good formats. But see, you buy it directly from us. We make a little more money from it. And I think you get more for your money. And we offer a lot of great titles and all kinds of different things. Not just the stuff I write about. There's I highly recommend the new book by Sholly McFarland on macOS Mojave, which has been a good seller, and it's one of the biggest changes to macOS in a while. So that's one that's definitely worth getting. All kinds of good books there at TakeControlBooks.com.
How long does it take you to write one of those books?
Too long. I typically spend an entire summer on the iOS books, but my definition of an entire summer changes a bit depending on the book. Like, for instance, this iOS 12 book was relatively easy because Apple didn't have just a lot of just game-changing features. But I still have to go through and compare all the text from the existing book. I list every new feature. I mean, every new feature. And I pour through developer documents, Apple's documentation. And Apple actually had good documentation this year. So if anyone at Apple is responsible for that and listening, I thank you. I go through third-party sites, all kinds of different places. I try to identify every new feature that's worth mentioning it, and I list that. Amount of work depends. Some are harder, some are easier. But even then, I have to keep checking back in and changing it over the summer, because the things change throughout the betas. And that's one of the big challenges is something that was true in beta 2 might be totally different in beta 3, and so on and so forth.
Yeah,
so
it wasn't a group FaceTime that was in there and then got pulled.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we spent about 2 hours testing that. And when we got done with a call, which was an utter disaster, I just said to everybody, I'm like, there's no way this ships. There's no way it ships. Did you try it, John?
No, didn't get to it.
Oh, it was terrible. I can't begin to list all the problems. I kept cutting out. People's faces were showing up upside down. Some people weren't showing up at all. It's just all kinds of bizarre bugs. It's one of the darndest things I've ever seen. But yeah, I was like, there's no way. There's no way this ships.
I wanted to ask you about the process of this. I know I've had Joe Kissel on the show. He's the publisher of Take Control Books. Mm-hmm. And I've been wondering about, does Joe really get hands-on involved with detail editing and proofing and structure? Or does he just say, ship it to me when you're ready, I'll publish it? Or something in between.
It's pretty involved. It's back and forth. Part of it depends on whether Joe is the book editor or not. Now, he is always the series editor. So to explain that difference, you might be just the editor for a book, but Joe always looks at it because there's certain, take control standards and style things and et cetera that Joe wants to make sure we're following up on. To give you an example, the home automation book, one of the reasons I think the home automation book was so good, we had Dan Frakes, formerly of Macworld, and now he's at New York Times with Wirecutter. He was the book editor on the home automation book. But then, of course, Joe still went through and did his own pass as well. So, I would say Joe's very involved. Now, there are some books he edits directly. He's both book editor and series editor. And so far, that's been true with the iOS books.
Series would be like an iOS series.
A series editor would be like the entire Take Control line. Like he looks and edits all the Take Control books. He reads through everything at least once or twice. So just to clarify that. So with the iOS books, he's pretty involved with those because he edits the, I work with him directly. Short answer to your question, he's involved.
All right. So I didn't know you had individual book editors for each book. Do you have freelancers come in and sort of do proofreading and stuff?
Yeah, it's a freelance thing. It really just depends on the book. And I'll be honest, I don't really handle that end of it, that decision or not. I guess it just depends on it's really, a question of resources. How much money do we have for this book? How much time does Joe have? You'd have to ask Joe about that. And it might be a little bit more sausage making than he cared to get into. Mm. But, I try not to focus on the business end because I try to just focus on writing a decent book for people to read.
So there are some iPhone XS and XR and XS Max specific features in iOS 12. Did you buy a new phone? Did you have to buy a new phone to test those out?
No, I did. I'll give an inside peek at the thought process here. So I always need at least one test device of both iPad and iPhone, right? So currently my daily driver is an iPhone 10. I have an iPhone 6 test device, and then I have an original iPad Air. And then I have an iPad Pro 10.5-inch from last year. And I actually bought that machine with my own money specifically for the iOS 11 book because there were so many iPad changes. So this year, that was fine. But I'm always worried about next year. And so I'm on the iPhone upgrade program. Mm-hmm. So I decided to not buy a new phone this year. And the reason is because the XS or the XS, whatever you want to call it, XS and XR, I don't see them offering a lot that's significantly different over the iPhone X. The iPhone X, I was like, oh, crap, I got to be able to document this. This is a totally different way of using an iPhone. So I had to get an iPhone X. The XR and XS, I'm like, I can skip these and then if I keep this phone, this 10 I have, another year, then it will be mine. And then if I need to, next year, I will buy a 10T or whatever they call it. They're still going to like ThinkPad names like 10, like X400 or whatever. But anyway, I can buy one of those. I'll keep the iPhone 10. That'll be my new test device. So while I'm on the early iOS betas, assuming I keep writing these iOS books, I'm not putting those early betas on my daily phone.
I never thought about that. It requires, now that you think of it, some planning to keep in step with the iOS developments and keep in step with your walking through the various iterations of iPhones and iPads. I never thought about it that way. cool.
Yeah, I hadn't either until I started doing this.
Something you find out. Yeah. So another question for you that I've been curious about. Do you find that you have to keep writing new books as older books lose their relevance, and you sort of have to maintain an even cash flow by writing new stuff all the time?
Well, the good news is Tidbits is my day job, and I look at Take Control as sort of bonus, or at least I try to. Some expenses have gone up in the past few years, so I do rely more on the Take Control income. Boy, we're really getting into the nitty gritty of this stuff now, but someone might be interested in this, so yeah, I'll just explain how it works. So the iOS books have been pretty steady income for me. Some years are better than others. iOS 11 was a really good book for me. That was the most popular iOS book yet. This one, the iOS 12 book, so far has been a bit softer than the past couple of years, and I fully expected that going in, because I
why do you think that is? Why do you think that is?
Well, there were no huge game changing features in iOS 12. I do think there are features that are worth talking about, right? Like there's screen time, there's the new shortcut stuff. I have chapters in both those, by the way. So I mean, this wasn't just slide out the door, freshen up a little bit. There's a lot of new content in this book. There's a lot of new content in it every year, because I always remove old chapters that people don't need. I add chapters to focus on new features. Like with the iOS 11 book, I added a whole chapter just on stuff with the iPad, because there's so many iPad changes. But anyway, I think most people saw iOS 12 as sort of a snow leopard kind of release. It's like, oh, it's like iOS 11, but just, runs better. Now, I think if the rumors about iOS 13, if they called iOS 13, if those are true, that there's going to be a new home screen, stuff like that, I think that would be a big seller.
Yeah, anytime that's going to be cool.
Anytime Apple makes a lot of changes or they make things confusing, like they made a lot of confusing stuff with iOS 11, sales go through the roof. Like, I think one of the big drivers of iOS 11 sales was that newfangled control center they introduced that was totally different than the old one. Because I think what happened, we started selling that book before iOS 11 was released. And then after it was released, it was like a day or two, and then boom, tons of sales. And I think a lot of people hit stuff they'd never seen before. And like, wait a second, I saw an email about that book. I need to go buy that book right now.
You may not be able to answer this question, but I'm going to throw it at you anyway. So do you, as a publisher on iOS books, do you have a feel for whether you think customers understand the dramatic security improvements from version to version? I know about 53% of the people are already on iOS 12, but there's always those charts that shows that, there's 10% of the people still running iOS 9. Do they know what trouble they're in?
I don't really think it's, I don't even think it's relevant as to whether they get the book or not, because, there's only so much. I do have a chapter on
security. I know.
But now in terms of whether they update or not, again, I think it's irrelevant, because I think people will look and they'll say, and our reader base tends to be a little older. So sometimes you just have people that say, I like what I have and I don't want it to change. And I understand that. I fully relate to that.
Yeah, it's dangerous in this day and age, especially with your iPhone.
It can be. Yeah. But I don't think it's the worst sin in the world. And I especially don't think it's too bad to wait a little bit and see what sort of unexpected problems. Like, for instance, I told people with iOS 12, I'm like, go ahead and update it. There shouldn't be any problems. Apple didn't really mess with anything. And then sure enough, there's a problem. I think they fixed it in 12.0.1. Yeah, they couldn't charge your phone.
Yeah.
And then my father-in-law comes to me.
That was a doofus mistake.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, totally frustrating.
Why don't we explain that for a second, Bowen? What's going on there? Tell the listeners.
You might understand better than I do. All I know is there are some people saying that their phones would not charge after they installed iOS 12. I didn't cover that.
There's a security mode that was introduced in the late iOS 11.
Okay.
And it's designed to keep unscrupulous people from attaching a black box via the lightning port and,
right.
and breaking into your phone. And so what Apple did was they set a feature of iOS that says if you haven't logged on in the last hour, then we're not going to respond to the lightning port for data. But they still should respond to the lightning port for power.
Right.
And somehow in the quality assurance, they didn't get the power and the data separated to make sure that if it's been days since you charged your phone and you're desperate to get power, you know, you hurry up and plug it in.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, well you know, it's been more than an hour. We're not going to talk to the lightning port for security. So I think that's what happened.
Why would Apple test something like that? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. There's that USB restricted mode. I totally blanked for a minute, but yeah, once you started talking about, that's what happened. Yeah. So, and then my father-in-law comes to me and he's like, all my pictures aren't here. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, they should be there. And long story short, you know, they made some design changes to photos in iOS 12. I don't think about stuff like this, but you know, for a lot of people, a small change like that can be totally jarring. So, yeah. So, and I couldn't figure the thing we still don't know. I'm like, are they gone or are they just not where you expect them to be?
Yeah.
And he's like, well, I don't know. I'm like, well, I can't tell you what the problem is then.
Yeah, there are people who play with their phones and kind of do creative learning and play, and there are people who just expect everything to stay the same forever, and they're befuddled when things change and they don't like it. So it's just something we got to get used to as iPhone owners.
Sure.
Hey, it's time to take a break.
Yeah. Okay.
So when second half of the show, when we come back, I want to kind of step through some of the new features of iOS 12, and then we'll get on to some other tech stuff that I have planned that we talked about. But first, we have to take a break, folks. We'll be back in 60 seconds. I'm chatting with Tidbits Managing Editor Josh Centers. We'll be right back.
Hello there, all you fabulous background mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO. Or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you. I'm chatting with Tidbits Managing Editor Josh Centers, and we're talking about iOS 12 and his new book, Take Control of iOS 12. How about if we take a look at, you know, I know you said there's nothing dramatically big in iOS 12, but it still has some interesting features. Mm-hmm. How about if we just step through some of those and give us a highlight of what's cool in iOS 12 and maybe whet the listener's appetite to go out and get it.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff. I mean, personally, I think is really cool in iOS 12, but you know, the actual response to it, you never know. Like, for instance, one of the things that people said for the longest time is that I wish I could make my own Siri commands. You know, how many times have you heard this over the years, John?
Gazillion.
Yeah. Yeah, people are always like, why can't I make my own Siri? You know, if I go to Android, I could do this and that, you know. So Apple added that. They added it in a confusing way because there's shortcuts. There's the Shortcuts app, which I'll get to in a minute, that's kind of like Apple Script. It's actually based on the old workflow app that Apple purchased. Then there's Siri Shortcuts, which is you can create your own Siri commands, and you can do that through the Shortcuts app, or you can do it through the old the regular old Settings app, or you can do it in your favorite third-party app that supports it, like Overcast or Carrot Weather. Now, here's a little interesting little tidbit. I did I wrote a Tidbits article about Siri Shortcuts and explained how to do it. I didn't get a single comment on it. Now, mind you, for years people were like, please, you know, I want to make my own Siri commands. No discussion, no comment. I made a YouTube video, and I cross-posted to both my own channel and the Tidbits channel. I've got, like, on my own channel, I'm looking at right now, I got 20 views on it. There's, you know, I checked all the tags. Like, yeah, the tags are good. You know, you're ranking on stuff. You know, this is coming up, and people search for it. And just, there's no interest. So it's just hilarious to me. I think it's an awesome feature, but
it is. But it's a little complex. I mean, it takes a while to. It takes a little bit of tutorial. It's not you can't step through a full Siri enabled shortcut without maybe some minor instructions in front of you about how to put the pieces together. What do you think?
Right, exactly. So, I mean, the Siri shortcuts aren't too complicated, but you know, I made a 3-minute video on it. So, I mean, it takes a minute to explain this stuff, and I'm not complaining. I just think it's one of the things that I find amusing as an author is, you know, you'll hear about all this, like, oh, yeah, we want this, and you give it to them, like, oh, who cares? No one wants that.
It's easy to gripe. It's not as easy to learn something new.
True. But anyway, a lot of new interesting features. I love some of the new notification stuff. I love the stacked notifications, which if you're running iOS 12, you already know about. You get multiple notifications from one app. They all stack onto each other, and you can tap them to expand them out. Mm-hmm. I like the there's one where, like, you can deliver things quietly, so it's not lighting up your phone and annoying you. It shows up in your notification center, but it doesn't, you know, show up on your lock screen.
There's a new notification, isn't there? The one that can break through the Do Not Disturb. It's a new brand of notification, I think.
Oh, yeah. Critical. The critical notifications. Have you seen an example of that? Because I don't even know of one.
No, I haven't yet seen it or used it.
Yeah, Apple mentioned it, but I don't know anything about it. I mean, there's some that could already break through. Like if you get an Amber Alert, those will come through at any time, no matter what. Phone calls from VIPs, text messages from VIPs, those always can break through. I don't really understand the critical alert thing at all.
I think some of this is driven by executive experience. I have a pet theory on this. For most users, everyday average user out there, you know, in the street, and he gets home and he doesn't want to be disturbed because it's time to play with the kids or do some work at home. He doesn't want to be disturbed, and it's pretty much absolute. And that you can get away with that, but you can't get away with it when you're Craig Federighi and Tim Cook calls and you had Do Not Disturb on. And then Tim Cook sends a messenger over and says, where the heck are you? I tried to contact you. And he says, well, I Do Not Disturb on. And so Tim Cook goes to the product manager for iOS and says, fix this. I'm going to make sure I get through to my people no matter what. That's my theory.
It seems like there was some kind of story about that. Like, wasn't it? Like Steve Jobs, during some of the early iPhone demos, he called, like, on stage, he would call random Apple executives, and they had to be, like, the second the phone rang, they answered.
Yeah, that's right.
Like, you would call Steve Jobs back. Now, you answer it right then. I don't care where you are. I don't care where you are.
That's right. What do you think of screen time? Because I've read stories about kids who've been able to bypass screen time by deleting the app and reinstalling it and resets the app limit.
I'm not the least bit surprised because kids are super adaptable and they're more incentivized to bypass these things than adults are to set them.
So you'd think Apple with its secure enclave and its high level of encryption and security and, you know, even the NSA can't break into an iPhone. You'd think they'd be able to beat kids at their own game.
Let me tell you something. My son is addicted to Ryan's toy review on YouTube. And if he had to break some NSA level encryption to watch Ryan on YouTube, he would figure that out.
All right. So we hit shortcuts, notifications, screen time. Tell me about the rest of the stuff that's new. It's interesting. Camera, photos.
I'll tell you my favorite feature, and it kind of passed me by during the summer because I didn't have as much beta app access as I would have liked. But that's the this integration of third-party password managers into the keyboard. So, you know, for a while now, iOS has had a built-in password manager. Well, now they've made it so that 1Password and LastPass and some of these different apps can plug into that. And so you can be logging into an app and you can choose 1Password as an option, and it scans you with Face ID and just fills that stuff in for you without you having to open 1Password or switch over, copy apps, things like that. Another feature I love that rolls into that, this is another one that wasn't actually, I was able to test this one. But another feature that I really like is it's a if you get a 2-factor authentication code, which not the best way to get these codes. Just to be clear, it's better to use a dedicated hardware device or an app. But some sites like PayPal only do it through SMS, and so you get one of these codes. iOS 12 automatically copies that to your keyboard. And you, when you're in the field there, you tap into the text, into the input field, and it shows up on your keyboard. It's like, do you want to insert this code? And so it's made logins super easy. So that's definitely one of my favorite things about iOS 12. The big thing, and this is one of those things everyone who's interested is talking about, but the Shortcuts app, which I do think is a big deal. I'm not sure who all just yet it is a big deal for, because it's very much a power user feature. Shortcuts, it was an app called Workflow, and it basically lets you visually program different things in iOS. And one of the things I love about it is that it lets you access things that you maybe could not get to otherwise. Well, I'll give you an example. Like one of my biggest irritations with iOS is if you open an MP3 file in a browser, you can listen to it there, but you can't download it for offline listening. And, you know, I live out in the boondocks. I don't have cell service. So, you know, if I'm out running or whatever and I want to listen to something, that's just a nice feature to have. Well, thanks to a little shortcut I downloaded, I can do that. It's kind of a stupid workaround because that should just be built into the browser, like a normal computer. But, you know, that's one way Shortcuts smooths out a lot of these iOS rough edges and things that aren't quite there yet. So, that's a pretty cool feature. I don't do a lot of the super advanced stuff with it that people like Federico Vitici do, although I really admire his work. But I do like those little tweaks like that. We're like, oh yeah, here's something you've been expecting in iOS forever, and oh, now you can finally do it.
What I'd like to do is tell Siri, say, Siri, help me create a shortcut. Sure, John, what would you like to do first?
Right.
And then have Siri walk you through it. But I suppose if Siri were that sophisticated, we wouldn't need shortcuts.
Right, yeah. Well, you talk about, well, I wish Siri could do. I wish I could replace Siri. can I use Google Home instead? That would be great. Thanks.
Oh, yeah. Well, good luck with that. Apple's never going to allow that. So,
no.
So is it true that you need an iPhone XS or XS Max or XR to do a Memoji?
Yeah, you need an iPhone X. You need something that's capable of the Animojis. Yeah, okay. But no, I actually have an example in the book of making a Memoji, and I have a video on my YouTube channel. Just search for Josh Sinners on YouTube and pull it up. I think if you search for Josh Sinners Memoji, you can find that video, and I explain how to do that. It's not super complicated. I don't use the Animoji and Memoji and stuff very much. To me, that's not a very interesting feature, but I'm sure to a certain segment it is.
Yeah, I find that I have a lot more stuff to do than to play around with stuff like that. I think that, like you said, there's a lot of people who love it, but I just don't have time to play with things like that. So it's not for everyone. Yeah. Anything else you wanted that's notable about iOS 12 you want to lay on us?
iOS 12. What else do we have? What are the Measure app, which I'm actually writing something for Tidbits about. I'm not too impressed with, to be honest. It's not super accurate. I think probably the thing I like the most about iOS 12, I did write about it in the book. It's not something you really need to know much about other than the performance is great. Like compared to iOS 11, I put this on my iPhone 6, which was totally unusable on iOS 11, and it's got a bad battery and all that. So I put iOS 12 on the iPhone 6, my test device. Instant improvement, like a brand new phone.
Wow.
I've heard a lot. It seems like it's the iPhone 6 that it helps the most, because I've heard a lot of people say stuff like that. Like, my iPhone 6 is usable again. So I greatly applaud Apple for that. I hope it's something they can continue to work on every year. And it sounded like they're dedicated to helping people keep their devices longer, which, you know, I'll believe it when I see it, because they're very much incentivized to do the opposite. But, you know, I do applaud them for that, and bravo. And your device should get fast.
It does get the latest security enhancements from iOS 12 onto the older phones, which they're also motivated to do.
Right, right. You know, and so, you know, yeah, there are a lot of, you know, good things going on there. But, yeah, I mean, really, I do love the performance improvements, and, you know, I applaud Apple for focusing on that. You know, I know it was probably very tempting for them to go ahead and redesign the home screen and do all kinds of crazy stuff like they've been doing the past few years. And, you know, it takes a certain, you know, to use a word here, it takes some courage to be able to say, no, we're going to hold off on the big stuff and we're going to focus on the fundamentals.
Phil Schiller, courage. Hey, you know, we only have a few minutes left, so we got to move on. So tell us about your new YouTube channel.
Well, it's actually not new at all. It's like 10 years old, but I've just now started adding stuff to it. Yeah, I got a video from like 2009 that had like 3,500 views back when no one used YouTube. And I'm like, darn, I should have capitalized then. But I've started making some how-to videos, and I've really gotten into you know, I've really been having a lot of fun with iMovie. And learning how to do some video editing. So I have stuff. I just posted one. It's sort of a business analysis of Netflix and what their prospects are like. I reviewed a $5 gaming mouse I found. I did one on making your own Siri commands.
What's the name of the channel?
It's Josh Sinners.
Okay. All one word.
Yeah. So just search for me there on YouTube and you can find me. I'm sort of experimenting with what exactly I want to do with it. I'm just kind of playing and seeing what really sticks and see what the audience likes. I may spin off, you know, like once I get the content down exactly, you know, to what I think people will be interested in seeing from me, I might spin that off away from my personal channel into a more of a dedicated channel. But, you know, we'll just see. We'll just see. You know, I haven't quite, figured all that out yet. For the moment, I'm just having some fun with it and trying to make some helpful videos that I can embed in our Tidbits articles.
Cool. Well, good luck with that.
Yeah, thanks.
I wanted to follow up on one final thing with you. So in the spring, you and I were wrestling with our Apple TV and Dolby Visions and our TVs and getting software updates and all that stuff going.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get that all ironed out? I did, finally.
Yeah, I did too. I bought a new TV.
Is that because you found out your TV, did you buy a new TV and find out it didn't work with Dolby Vision or didn't have an update or what?
Well, there's two parts to this. First of all, I got an update that said this enables HDR on your TV. I'm like, oh, cool.
Probably HDR 10.
Yeah, but then I dove into it and it turns out the TV just didn't support HDR at all. They issue software updates for like a whole different range of TVs, and some of them support. And if your TV could do HDR, then it did. But apparently, mine was not included in that.
Oh.
My advice is not buy a Sony TV, because let me tell you what happened a few months after we talked. Is it just died? Like it just wouldn't turn on one day. My guess is probably a bad capacitor in the power supply.
Mm-hmm.
I have it over in the corner. I'm looking at it right now. It probably, if I thought it was worth the money, I would send it somewhere to get it fixed. But I'm going to tell you what I did instead is I went to Walmart and I was just kind of goofing around there. And I found a TCL TV for $380. And I helped my in-laws get a similar one last year on Black Friday for like a little over $300. So I was like, you know, that was actually a pretty good TV. And it's got the Roku software built into it. And it does support HDR. So, yeah.
HDR? Plain Jane HDR 10?
Yeah, just HDR 10. It doesn't do Dolby Vision. But, hey, for under $400.
How big is it?
55-inch. 55-inch.
55-inch 4K TV supports HDR 10 for 300 and some bucks.
Yeah.
Wow.
And best part, honestly, I love the Roku built-in software. It is amazing. My wife loves it, too, because The Sony had Android TV, and that of course is super complicated and super slow. The Roku software is fantastic, and I also got a 3-year warranty with that. I think it was like a little under $500 by the time I paid tax and got the warranty. So yeah, super happy with it. I'm kind of glad the Sony died, to be honest.
Okay, well, I'm glad you're up and running.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we've come to the end of the show. Wow, 35 minutes. That went fast. tell the listeners how they can contact you if they wish.
Email John. No, my articles are on tidbits.com. You can buy my books, again, at takecontrolbooks.com. I'm on Twitter at jcenters, J-C-E-N-T-E-R-S. And I'm also on YouTube. Just search for me on there.
All right, great. Well, thanks for joining me. This was a wonderful discussion. Thanks for filling in us in on the mechanics of your books and on all the new features of iOS 12. It was great.
All right, thanks for having me, John.
Folks, you've been listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode with John Martellaro and Josh Centers. We'll see you again next week.